The old lady looked at him carefully, and with perfect gravity, and made as though she would have spoken, except that her hand closed upon the pipe which a slave had been tending for her, and at once she seemed to forget him. She bent and sucked greedily at the pipe for a moment, and the sharpness passed from her eyes, and a film of forgetfulness came over them. Wang Lung remained standing before her until, in passing, her eyes caught his figure.
"What is this man doing here?"
she asked with sudden anger. It was as though she had forgotten everything. The gateman's face was immovable. He said nothing. "I am waiting for the woman, great lady," said Wang Lung, in much astonishment.
"The woman? What woman?"
the old lady began, but the slave girl at her side stooped and whispered, and the lady recovered herself.
"Ah, yes. I forgot for the moment. A small affair. You have come for the slave called Olan. I remember we promised her to some farmer in marriage. You are that farmer?"
"I am he," replied Wang Lung.
"Call Olan quickly,"
said the old lady to her slave. It was as though she was suddenly impatient to be done with all this and to be left alone in the stillness of the great room with her opium pipe. And, in an instant, the slave appeared, leading by the hand a square, rather tall figure clothed in clean blue cotton coat and trousers. Wang Lung glanced once and then away, his heart beating. This was his woman.
"Come here, slave,"
said the old lady carelessly.
"This man has come for you."
The woman went before the lady and stood with bowed head and hands clasped.
"Are you ready?"
asked the lady. The woman answered slowly, as an echo. "Ready." Wang Lung, hearing her voice for the first time, looked at her back as she stood before him. It was a good enough voice, not loud, not soft, plain, and not ill-tempered. The woman's hair was neat and smooth, and her coat clean. He saw with an instant's disappointment that her feet were not bound. But this he could not dwell upon, for the old lady was saying to the gateman,
"Carry her box out to the gate, and let them be gone."
And then she called Wang Lung and said,
"Stand beside her while I speak."
And when Wang had come forward, she said to him,
"This woman came into our house when she was a child of 10, and here she has lived until now when she is 20 years old. I bought her in a year of famine when her parents came south because they had nothing to eat. They were from the north in Shantung, and there they returned, and I know nothing further of them. You see, she has the strong body and the square cheeks of her kind. She will work well for you in the field and drawing water, and all else that you wish. She is not beautiful, but that you do not need. Only men of leisure have the need for beautiful women to divert them. Neither is she clever. But she does well what she is told to do, and she has a good temper. So far as I know, she is virgin. She has not beauty enough to tempt my sons and grandsons, even if she had not been in the kitchen. If there has been anything, it has been only a serving man. But with the innumerable and pretty slaves running freely about the courts, I doubt if there has been anyone. Take her, and use her well. She is a good slave, although somewhat slow and stupid, and had I not wished to acquire merit at the temple for my future existence by bringing more life into the world, I should have kept her, for she is good enough for the kitchen. But I marry my slaves off if any will have them, and the lords do not want them."
And to the woman she said,
"Obey him, and bear him sons and yet more sons. Bring the first child to me to see."
"Yes, ancient mistress," said the woman submissively. They stood hesitating, and Wang Lung was greatly embarrassed, not knowing whether he should speak or what.
"Well, go, will you?"
said the old lady in irritation, and Wang Lung, bowing hastily, turned and went out, the woman after him, and after her the gateman, carrying on his shoulder the box. This box he dropped down in the room where Wang Lung returned to find his basket, and would carry it no further, and indeed he disappeared, without another word. Then Wang Lung turned to the woman, and looked at her for the first time. She had a square, honest face, a short, broad nose with large, black nostrils, and her mouth was as wide as a gash in her face. Her eyes were small, and of a dull black in color, and were filled with some sadness that was not clearly expressed. It was a face that seemed habitually silent and unspeaking, as though it couldn't speak if it would. She bore patiently Wang Lung's look, without embarrassment or response, simply waiting until he had seen her. He saw that it was true there was not beauty of any kind in her face, a brown, common, patient face. But there were no pockmarks on her dark skin, nor was her lip split. In her ears he saw his rings hanging, the gold-washed rings he had bought, and on her hands were the rings he had given her. He turned away with secret exultation. Well, he had his woman. "Here is this box and this basket," he said gruffly. Without a word, she bent over, and picking up one end of the box, she placed it upon her shoulder and, staggering under its weight, tried to rise. He watched her at this, and suddenly he said, "I will take the box. Here is the basket." And he shifted the box to his own back, regardless of the best robe he wore, and she, still speechless, took the handle of the basket. He thought of the 100 courts he had come through, and of his figure, absurd under its burden. "If there were a side gate," he muttered, and she nodded after a little thought, as though she didn't understand too quickly what he said. Then she led the way through a small, unused court that was grown up with weed, its pool choked, and there, under a bent pine tree, was an old round gate that she pulled loose from its bar, and they went through and into the street. Once or twice he looked back at her. She plodded along steadily on her big feet as though she had walked there all her life, her wide face expressionless. In the gate of the wall he stopped uncertainly and fumbled in his girdle with one hand for the pennies he had left, holding the box steady on his shoulder with the other hand. He took out 2 pence, and with these he bought 6 small green peaches. "Take these, and eat them for yourself," he said gruffly. She clutched them greedily as a child might, and held them in her hand without speech. When next he looked at her as they walked along the margin of the wheat fields, she was nibbling one cautiously, but when she saw him looking at her, she covered it again with her hand and kept her jaws motionless. And thus they went, until they reached the western field where stood the temple to the earth. This temple was a small structure, not higher in all than a man's shoulder, and made of grey bricks and roofed with tile. Wang Lung's grandfather, who had farmed the very fields upon which Wang Lung now spent his life, had built it, hauling the bricks from the town upon his wheelbarrow. The walls were covered with plaster on the outside, and a village artist had been hired in a good year once to paint upon the white plaster a scene of hills and bamboo. But the rain of generations had poured upon this painting until now there was only a faint feathery shadow of bamboos left, and the hills were almost wholly gone. Within the temple, snugly under the roof, sat two small, solemn figures, earthen, for they were formed from the earth of the fields about the temple. These were the god himself and his lady. They wore robes of red and gilt paper, and the god had a scant, drooping mustache of real hair. Each year at the new year, Wang Lung's father bought sheets of red paper and carefully cut and pasted new robes for the pair. And each year rain and snow beat in, and the sun of summer shone in and spoiled their robes. At this moment, however, the robes were still new, since the year was but well begun, and Wang Lung was proud of their spruce appearance. He took the basket from the woman's arm, and carefully he looked about under the pork for the sticks of incense he had bought. He was anxious lest they were broken and thus make an evil omen, but they were whole, and when he had found them, he stuck them side by side in the ashes of other sticks of incense that were heaped before the gods, for the whole neighborhood worshipped these two small figures. Then, fumbling for his flint and iron, he caught, with a dried leaf for tinder, a flame to light the incense. Together, this man and this woman stood before the gods of their fields. The woman watched the ends of the incense redden and turn gray. When the ash grew heavy, she leaned over, and with her forefinger she pushed the head of ash away. Then, as though fearful for what she had done, she looked quickly at Wang Lung, her eyes dumb. But there was something he liked in her movement. It was as though she felt that the incense belonged to them both. It was a moment of marriage. They stood there in complete silence, side by side, while the incense smoldered into ashes. And then, because the sun was sinking, Wang Lung shouldered the box, and they went home. At the door of the house, the old man stood to catch the last rays of the sun upon him. He made no movement as Wang Lung approached with the woman. It would have been beneath him to notice her. Instead, he feigned great interest in the clouds, and he cried, "That cloud which hangs upon the left horn of the new moon speaks of rain. It will come not later than tomorrow night." And then, as he saw Wang Lung take the basket from the woman, he cried again, "And have you spent money?" Wang Lung set the basket on the table. "There will be guests tonight," he said briefly, and he carried the box into the room where he slept, and set it down beside the box where his own clothes were. He looked at it strangely. But the old man came to the door and said volubly, "There is no end to the money spent in this house." Secretly he was pleased that his son had invited guests. But he felt it wouldn't do to give out anything but complaints before his new daughter-in-law, lest she be set from the first in ways of extravagance. Wang Lung said nothing, but he went out and took the basket into the kitchen, and the woman followed him there. He took the food piece by piece from the basket and laid it upon the ledge of the cold stove, and he said to her, "Here is pork and here beef and fish. There are seven to eat. Can you prepare food?" He didn't look at the woman as he spoke. It wouldn't have been seemly. The woman answered in her plain voice, "I have been kitchen slave since I went into the house of Huang. There were meats at every meal." Wang Lung nodded and left her, and didn't see her again until the guests came crowding in, his uncle, jovial and sly and hungry, his uncle's son, an impudent lad of 15, and the farmers clumsy and grinning with shyness. Two were men from the village with whom Wang Lung exchanged seed and labor at harvest time, and one was his next-door neighbor, Ching, a small, quiet man, ever unwilling to speak unless he were compelled to it. After they'd been seated about the middle room with demurring and unwillingness to take seats for politeness, Wang Lung went into the kitchen to bid the woman serve. Then he was pleased when she said to him, "I will hand you the bowls if you will place them upon the table. I don't like to come out before men." Wang Lung felt in him a great pride that this woman was his and did not fear to appear before him but would not before other men. He took the bowls from her hands at the kitchen door and he set them upon the table in the middle room and called loudly, "Eat, my uncle and my brothers." And when the uncle, who was fond of jokes, said, "Are we not to see the moth-browed bride?" Wang Lung replied firmly, "We are not yet won. It is not meet that other men see her until the marriage is consummated." And he urged them to eat, and they ate heartily of the good fare, heartily and in silence. And this one praised the brown sauce on the fish, and that one the well-done pork. And Wang Lung said over and over in reply, "It is poor stuff, it is badly prepared." But in his heart he was proud of the dishes. For with what meat she had, the woman had combined sugar and vinegar and a little wine and soy sauce, and she had skillfully brought forth all the force of the meat itself, so that Wang Lung himself had never tasted such dishes upon the tables of his friends. That night, after the guests had tarried long over their tea and had done with their jokes, the woman still lingered behind the stove. And when Wang Lung had seen the last guest away, he went in, and she cowered there in the straw piles, asleep beside the ox. There was straw in her hair when he roused her. And when he called her, she put up her arms suddenly in her sleep as though to defend herself from a blow. When she opened her eyes at last, she looked at him with her strange, speechless gaze, and he felt as though he faced a child. He took her by the hand and led her into the room where that morning he had bathed himself for her, and he lit a red candle upon the table. In this light he was suddenly shy when he found himself alone with the woman, and he was compelled to remind himself, "There is this woman of mine. The thing is to be done." And he began to undress himself doggedly. As for the woman, she crept around the corner of the curtain and began without a sound to prepare for the bed. Wang Lung said gruffly, "When you lie down, put the light out first." Then he lay down and drew the thick quilt about his shoulders and pretended to sleep. But he was not sleeping. He lay quivering, every nerve of his flesh awake. And when, after a long time, the room went dark, and there was the slow, silent, creeping movement of the woman beside him, an exultation filled him fit to break his body. He gave a hoarse laugh into the darkness and seized her.